I think your message now is for 2019, consumers expect far more value for their money than just giving us $20,000 to be maitre d's at a restaurant, taking names and numbers and open for inspection, handing out an auction contract, saying, come back in 21 days, you can have anything you like on the menu so long as it's passed, or put your hand up and have the property. They're not seeing value there. If discounting is your lane, go in that lane. But my view is consumers should be hiring an agent for their negotiation skills, not their discounting mentality. And, you know, that's really where they're going to get the best value from appointing a real estate agent to sell their home, because we all know the agent who negotiates the highest price is the cheapest agent in the end.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent Magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.
Hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent. Well, 2018 has been a year that has delivered a mixed bag out there in the real estate industry, with the winds of change travelling as fast as a Glenn McGrath bouncer. My guest this week happens to be a cricket fan and has a few fans himself in the industry. Of course, I'm talking about the marvellous Rick Rushton. This chat with Rick is a whistle-stop tour of all the hits and misses of 2018, with a couple of cautionary tales, some tributes and inspiration for the new year. And of course, on behalf of all of us here at Elite Agent, we'd like to wish you all the best for the festive season, good health and a wonderful 2019. Enjoy the podcast with Rick Rushton.
So welcome to the podcast, Rick Rushton.
Thank you, Samantha, and lovely to be with you and your listeners at this festive time of the year.
It is, and I'm delighted to be doing our traditional end of year wrap with you, Rick, because obviously you've had a massive year yourself in 2018. You've launched a podcast and you've released a book, and we're going to get onto those in a second. But what I thought we might do is just have a bit of a recap of the year and get your thoughts on some of the major events of the year, both in and out of real estate.
Sounds like a plan.
So first of all, before we get underway, just describe your year for me in a hashtag.
Oh, work-life balance. That's kind of been my goal for the better part of nearly three decades now, Sam. So when I started off in sales, went through to leadership, owned a business, ran a company, was a producing principal. I never wanted to be the richest real estate agent in the graveyard, so I was always very big on having work-life balance. But my wife and my family needs to know that having their dad around or their husband around with no economic opportunities is not great either. So it's just work-life balance was my year, and so far so good, ticked it all off, and you know, hopefully I can improve on that in 2019.
Maybe you can give us a few tips on that, because I think there are some of us that are out there that are still struggling with it. Look, January 2018 was only 12 months ago, and it feels like it was yesterday, and the year started in Australia as usual with cricket for the last time on Channel 9. Bushfires and the usual Invasion Day protests. So cast your mind back to the beginning of 2018. What were you doing in January and what did you hope for this year?
You're right. It felt like last week. It's gone that quick. But I started off in Perth. I ran my biggest public event in Perth that I've ever done. And by the end of January, I finished up in Christchurch. And I've been to every state, capital, territory, save for Darwin, in that period doing five kickstarts for different groups, whether they be for Harcourts or big groups like that, smaller groups as well. And it was an interesting time for me to be in that mode and to be in that sort of situation whereby I was travelling around and getting a feel for what was going on. So I could sense what the market was doing from an Australian, New Zealand perspective or an Australasian perspective far quicker than most because of that fact. So seemed like only yesterday. My goal was to influence as many people as I could. Hopefully I ticked that box off, because before the end of January, I was in front of about 5,000 people, which is amazing.
Yeah, amazing. January was when you released your book, The Power of Connection, and we ran a couple of excerpts on that. My favourite was the one that, is it okay to talk back to the voice in your head? So tell us about the voices in your head, Rick.
Well, there's lots of them and they keep on speaking all the time. But I think, you know, a lot of people listening to this podcast are going, what is Rick and Samantha talking about? Well, that's the little voice we're talking about. You don't speak out loud, but it's talking to you all the time. You know, am I good enough? Am I ready now? You know, I sold my real estate practice and went launching into the world of published author and platform speaker and got to speak outside of the real estate industry at a greater depth this year than ever before. And, you know, there's a part of me that thinks, wowee, I'm sort of now flying without the life vest and without the oxygen mask, and am I good enough? It's that little voice that continually challenges us. What I know is when that voice comes into my head, that's my chance to either listen to it or step up to it and say, yeah, of course I am. Everything I need is within me now. We're not hardwired to take risks, Samantha, as human beings, as real estate agents. We're hardwired to stay in the comfort zone a little bit, not do anything that's going to harm us or hurt us. So that little voice starts with our thinking. If we get the thinking right, everything else changes from there. So it is okay to talk back to that little voice inside our head.
And someone who had a voice inside his head in January last year as well must have been John McGrath, who decided to get the band back together and take the reins back on the company. So I have to say, there's a story, I don't know if you're aware, but you were the cause of me almost headbutting John McGrath. I remember at ARIC a couple of years ago, it was your birthday actually, and I went over to wish you a happy birthday and kind of went kiss, kiss on both sides. And as I got to the right-hand side, I nearly headbutted the gentleman behind you, which happened to be John, disguised in a black jumper. So I'm kind of glad that I narrowly avoided disaster there. But what do you think 2019 might hold for McGrath?
Well, as a person, what I know about John, having known him now for 25 years, is that he'll keep looking for the opportunities to grow. That's really one of his mantras. It's in his DNA. As a company, they're obviously repositioning. And, you know, one thing's for certain, no matter what is thrown his way, he's going to find a way to find the positive in it. He doesn't fall into other people's plans. He creates his own plan. I'm pretty sure he's going to be doing that. So no doubt there'll be some opportunity. No doubt there'll be some difficulty. He'll just keep looking for the opportunity within the difficulty, Samantha. That's what I honestly believe about John.
And I think that's good advice for everyone too, Rick. There's always a series of opportunities that look like they're terrible problems, but you just got to flip that thinking around.
Absolutely. And he's done it better than most, as we all know. And that's why he is what he is and who he is and the influencer that he is in the greatest way in terms of our industry for the better part of my career anyway.
Absolutely. January was a huge month. They say that, you know, over Christmas it's slow news, but definitely not in the case of 2018. That was when we received the news that Anthony Catalano, aka the Cat, had resigned from Domain. And Domain's had a big year, and now Tom Ainsworth has been made redundant and Melina has gone to REA. So what do you think the future for Domain at Nine will be?
Well, I got to meet Jason Pellegrino, or Pellers as I now know him, back in September of this year, and he was in the Victorian office of Domain and had a really good chat with him, and I asked him what his plans were, funnily enough, and he just sort of said, my plan at the moment is just to meet people and find out what's going on here before I sort of make any changes. I want to know what the lie of the land looks like. So if you follow his history with his work at Google and before that and all the things he's gone into, he's into growth organisations and he's into growing things. So there's no doubt in my mind that he is very keen to make sure that Domain isn't part of a takeover but part of an alliance and a partnership, and he's going to look for growth opportunities for Domain and, more importantly, maybe the growth opportunities for his people there. So in a fairly competitive marketplace with REA and all the other providers, there's no doubt that they've fallen right on their feet with that guy, that's for sure. I don't know Cat that well. I know him okay. I've been to a few industry functions with him, but I don't know him. I don't profess to know him super well, nor do I profess to know Jason uber well, but they're both sort of people that seemingly want to do the best for their organisations. I think they're in the right hands right now, because unlike Catalano, I think Pellegrino is more of a conservative moderate and he's going to look for growth opportunities, but he's going to do it in a calming way. So I see nothing but clear skies ahead for them as well.
Interesting. Well, speaking of conservative moderates, or actually not conservative moderates, let's talk about February. The non-conservative moderate leader of our National Party back then, Barnaby Joyce, one of the most Googled words in Australia this year, shone a light on office romances. And then we had all sorts of resignations from Parliament based on birth certificates. And then a guy by the name of Jet Xavier with a great hairdo was telling everyone to go home and balance their family better with their jobs, noting that a lot of the industry is continually stressed, tired, anxious and over the hustle. So what's your view on that?
Oh, I think he's right. I don't think I needed that research to come out to confirm it with me. I watched it and observed it and realised that someone who'd been in the business for almost 30 years, that this business can be your life if you make it your life, but it normally comes at a cost. And so I didn't want this to be my life. I just wanted it to fund my lifestyle. So for me, I like the things that money can buy, Samantha, but I love the things that money can't buy. So I like the fact that money can get me a nice home and a nice postcode, but it won't buy me the home in terms of if I can't put good things in it. So I think Jet's spruiking the research together with Tanja Jones, two good friends of mine. I think they're all over it, but I don't know that most of us needed that research to understand the obvious to us. It's really a case of not knowing the information but doing something with it. So it's not knowing what to do. It's actually getting on and making sure that we have some strategies in play to give us that balance. So my simple focus on that is wherever I am, be there. So when I'm at home, I'm at home. When I'm at work, I'm at work. And wherever I am, I just don't mix the two, because if I'm at home thinking, gee, I should have been making more production calls, then I'm not going to serve either arena well. And if I'm actually at work thinking I really should be at my son or my daughter or my wife's major thing that's happening with them at the moment, I'm not going to serve my workflow either. So I just think the simple message is wherever you are, be there.
Be there, yeah. And sounds like Darrell Kerrigan was right too, you know, when he said, you can't buy what I've got.
That's right. How's the serenity? Unbelievable.
Absolutely. So March was Australian cricket captain Steve Smith was suspended and, you know, there was a ball tampering scandal in South Africa. What on earth would Richie say about that?
You and Mark are the only two people on the planet that actually want me to do my Richie impersonation. Did I ever tell you I met him at the Qantas Club back in the 90s and I walked up to him and I said, oh, my God, you're Richie Benno. And he said, well, I sure hope so, son, or someone else is looking up in his underpants. And I said, you know, I get told I can do a really good Richie. Yeah, he says, all right, son, go away. I said, welcome back here to the MCG and welcome to Melbourne Viewers for the first time today. Marvellous effort that Barry Strange two for 222. And he said, and people tell you you do that well. What else do you do, son? I said, oh, I'm a real estate agent. He goes, yeah, I'd stick to that. So that was it. I think Richie as a custodian of Australian cricket would be shattered to think that, you know, he played it hard and he played it fair. He never looked to cheat, I don't think. And I don't think he would have been happy at all. He'd be more gutted with the fact that, you know, cricket's no longer on Nine, Sky, World of Sports. It's over on Seven now and Fox. I don't think he'd be happy. But that, in a funny way, Sam, was really an indication of where Australian culture got to in terms of cricket, or the Australian cricket culture, I should say. And so one of the things I was asked to speak a lot about throughout the year was culture. And now I think that was the end result of some pretty poor culture behavioural standards that were allowed to slip long before that. So Richie, like all of us, really gutted. We hold the Australian cricket team up to a higher standard, I would have thought.
I think it's a good ethical metaphor as well, really, in that if you do the wrong thing, it's likely you're going to get found out. And the speed with which stuff like that happens these days is ridiculous as well. So it's even more important to remember how good works and how not so good works too.
Especially on a cricket coverage when they can work out that a leather ball has just touched within a millimetre of a cricket bat. What the heck did they think was not going to be missed there with sandpaper being stuffed down the shorts? And anyway, that's a story for another time. But my view is that was a great wake-up call for all of us to understand, especially as leaders and the culture we've got, the standard we allow to happen and the standard that we walk past is the standard that's going to define us a year from now, a decade from now, unless we shift something. So, you know, I think that there's some positive culture stories out there. That was a negative one, but a great cautionary tale for all of us, I would have thought.
Yeah, I think that's great advice for leaders. And also, I mean, speaking of sport, in the real estate industry, auctions are sport, right?
Yes, very much so.
We kind of look at the auction results on a Saturday like they're the sports pages. We actually gathered together a whole bunch of auctioneers, actually. And what's been interesting is since then, obviously the market has softened a little bit. And there's been talk that I've heard lately about how auctions are losing popularity, along with the Sky falling and Chicken Little falling over and all that sort of thing. But do you think we will continue to see a fall in auctions next year?
Well, auctions are audience participation sports, so we need an audience there. That tends to be buyers, which are obviously decreasing in line with the volumes of offerings that are out there as well. So I suspect that what you'll see is the good properties will still sell because we don't build enough homes for the demand in certainly the right postcodes. I think where you'll see the shift in auctions will be that not everything will go to auction now. It'll be the properties that are perhaps got the right motivation on behalf of the seller, perhaps have the right attraction in terms of what a buyer would put high up on their shopping list. I think shows like The Block and Renovation Rescue and all these sorts of particular reality programs for real estate have just made vendors think, you know, if we really don't mind the neighbours, maybe we'll stay and renovate and extend or put in the pool or upgrade the kitchen, whereas, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago they'd move to get those things. Now they're going to stay put and do them. And so I think there's that double-edged sword there of many vendors thinking they're going to do a bit of DIY on their own home, and also the fact that they just can't see where they want to go to because the volumes are dropping, so they'll probably stay put. So what I see happening across Australasia, and I saw it happening in January in my travels, is that there will be volume to decrease, and as such, everything's going to come back, and no doubt about that, auctions will too. But I still think the right properties with the right auction strategy is still the way to go, and there's no better system on the planet for getting vendors in tune with the market reality and getting buyers to compete in a 3 to 4 week campaign anywhere globally that I've been to than the auction system. So that's where I see it happening.
Also, there was mass hysteria that we haven't seen since the Beatles when Josh and Matt Altman and Lewis D. Ortiz. I am kidding, of course.
The Fab Three, not the Fab Four. Yeah, when they came to Australia.
From Million Dollar Listing fame. And I want to talk about Million Dollar Agent in a second, but when you think of the word successful, who was the first person that comes to mind for you?
In a global sense, it's probably two people. It's Jim Rohn, who was my mentor, the late, great Jim Rohn, who was really the grandfather of the personal development industry in many respects. And I got the great fortune of introducing him at ARIC and bringing him out down under for the Australian audience. And John McGrath, Philip Webb, two guys I rate incredibly highly in our industry, both said that Jim Rohn had the biggest impact on them. So when I think of success in that platform, I think of him, a holistic success. So I think for me, success is when what you do on a daily basis meets your highest values. So I love this stuff, exchanging information. I love influencing people. I love sharing knowledge. I love creatively speaking, collaboratively speaking. You know, what I do realize is that success is not a solo performance. We need other people to help us get there. So I love this sort of interaction with you. It's always great. Whenever we catch up, we always laugh because you get me to do Richie and no one else wants me to do Richie, which is real concern.
I do love it when you do Richie. So let's talk about this million-dollar agent thing. Again, this year there seems to be this, I guess maybe Jet has something to do with it, but also Michael Shergold at ARIC, he said, start thinking about making a difference rather than making a dollar.
Yep.
What do you think has the tide shifted? Is the million-dollar agent a myth?
I don't know that it's a myth. I think it's aspirational for a lot of people. I think that when you look at our industry and a lot of your subscribers to this podcast, those that are receiving your magazine once a month, they're probably not in the million-dollar club and never will be. You know, they're probably working in regional Australasia, where an average fee might be $6,000, $7,000, or $8,000. I mean, this last month I did major metropolitan cities. I also did regional Victoria, regional New South Wales, regional Tasmania. They've got a fee where it might be $6,000. You can't do a million-dollar product. The market doesn't sustain that. So I think my view on it is that million-dollar agents aspirational, there's no questions about that, but I don't think that's what we should be setting up as the actual model for our industry. I think our model for our industry should be, is agent A a little bit better this year than he or she was last year? Is he or she on an incremental growth phase, not at the expense of their personal life? Are they having great work-life balance? Are they making a difference? I think what Michael Shergold was talking about, what I know most great real estate educators are really putting out there is process, procedure, results. So get the process in play. Look after Samantha. Look after Mark. Don't try and hurt them. Just help them out. If you do enough of that, the money will take care of itself a little bit. So I'm a big believer in process, procedure, results. I think the million-dollar agent thing is great for the ego. It's maybe not what everyone needs to sort of launch out and try and do. I think you've got to look for incremental growth. I'm not into 10X and 5X. I'm sure it happens. It's just not what I'm educating out there. I just find that most of the audiences I'm in front of, they're finding that the million-dollar agent is like 3%. 97% of them are sort of in between zero and there and just want to find out, how do I progress along? How do I get a little bit better? Not at the expense of my family life, not at the expense of my health, and not at the expense of making real estate absolutely the be-all and end-all. So I think it's had its time, to be honest, and I think what we're looking for now is just incremental growth.
I think it comes back to that definition of success too, doesn't it? Because everyone's definition of success is different. So,
well, I mean, economically, we look for $1 million, but I know families that would give $1 million to have magic with their children. They've done well economically, but they've lost touch with their kids. They can't connect with them. So who's more wealthier? The single mum who's raising two children, not that they're doing great, but has magic with their children, versus the million-dollar producer who's, you know, probably going home to a pet rock because everyone in his life's left him and he's got no one to share it with because he loves the industry more than his family. I think somewhere between there is reality and everyone's just got to find what that is for them.
Apparently you can get a robot for that now. Like in Japan, there's some artificial intelligence spouses that you can get a hold of.
Well, I think it's got to have some global value, I would have thought. It's interesting how that all rock and rolls. I'll stick to human beings, though, if I can.
Yeah, I'd like to stick to my human, too. I reckon he's all right. So, April, Commonwealth Games, Royal Commission, and Purple Bricks got in a bit of strife for the wording of their ads, their wording of commissary and all that sort of thing. And this always astounds me because every time we publish anything on Purple Bricks, everybody jumps on it. Like it's like click, 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 click. The news pieces on Purple Bricks are our most clicked articles of the year, yet everyone hates them. And I've sensed that in the US as well. Nobody really wanted to know them. So why the fascination with Purple Bricks, do you think, still throughout this year?
Well, I think agents, traditional agents, see them as stealing food off their plate and food out of their family's mouths. But I just see them as every other competitor in the marketplace. They're just another competitor. They're like air travel has Tiger Air and Qantas. And, you know, in between that, you can have Jetstar or Virgin. You can have your pick. It really does depend on where you are in the marketplace. But if everyone was the same and valued everything the exact same thing, there'd be one airline, there'd be one car model, there'd be one everything. I think there's choice, and that's great. We've just got to be a better value for money proposition for consumers going forward. So I don't care what your model is. You just got to add value around that model and make sure that you are somebody who's creating value for your consumer. And whether that's Purple Bridge, traditional real estate, independent, part of a network or cooperative, I really don't care. I think your message now is for 2019, consumers expect far more value for their money than just giving us $20,000 to be maitre d's at a restaurant, taking names and numbers and open for inspection, handing out an auction contract, saying, come back in 21 days, you can have anything you like on the menu so long as it's passed, or put your hand up and have the property. They're not seeing value there. So I think the reason why Purple Bricks has grown a little bit is because there's always going to be a section of the market that just shops around on dollar. So do we want to compete in that area, or do we want to create more value somewhere else? I suspect most of your listeners would be adding more value in other areas. Just find out what that is, broadcast it out there long and strong and proud, and just swim in your lane. If discounting is your lane, go in that lane. But my view is consumers should be hiring an agent for their negotiation skills, not their discounting mentality. And, you know, that's really where they're going to get the best value from appointing a real estate agent to sell their home, because we all know the agent who negotiates the highest price is the cheapest agent in the end.
Absolutely. I like to think of it as consumers are either part of Planet Story or Planet Price. There will always be a consumer that will go for, and this is my telco background speaking, but, you know, someone's always going to go for the cheapest mobile phone, the cheapest mobile phone plan. And then there's someone else who's always going to want the iPhone and all the apps. So it's about what market you're in and knowing how to appeal to that market, I think.
Agree 100%.
Also in April, realestate.com.au launched their first agent product, Agent Elevate, and recently they've announced Match and Ratings and Reviews, which will be launched in 2019. What do you think that means for some of the other ratings and review sites and things like that out there for 2019?
Well, I think that's going to be a huge space, because I've had the great fortune of speaking with Steve Carroll at a lot of conferences this year. Rate My Agent is something we have to produce from the inside out as real estate agents to get our consumers to go online and do it. Whereas this one, I think the consumers are already in that REA space anyway. So I see that as being a huge shift and a great flip for us to make sure that we're strong in that area, because there we can align with the drive and reach of REA better than we can with something like Rate My Agent. Now, Google reviews are still very strong too. And I think the consumers are starting to see Rate My Agent as a bit like TripAdvisor, like hotels staff going on their own TripAdvisor sites and giving themselves a bit of a fake rating, especially when we've had so many agents saying, thanks for the transaction, can I show you now how to rate me on Rate My Agent? Whereas REA's platform, the consumer's going to talk back to Rate My Agent before there's any prompting from us.
And I don't think you even have to have necessarily been a direct person in a transaction. I think you can just be someone that has been associated with a real estate agent rather than someone who is physically bought or sold from that agent to put that review up there. So it all seems a bit out there to me, but I guess time will tell. Okay, so May was a massive month, actually. So Harry and Meghan got married. Charles Tarby announced Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate would be coming into Australia, and we all made the annual trek up to the Gold Coast, and we noticed a big trend there. What do you think that was?
Well, first of all, with Charles Tarby, I was really fortunate to speak at the C21 Leadership Conference up on the Hamilton Island, and that's where he talked about the merge with Better Homes and Gardens, and that was really quite amazing. And it was the 21st ARIC, or I lose track of them. So another ARIC sort of process again, where we were all looking for the next high-tech, high-touch sort of development in our industry. And, yeah, there was a little bit going on there to a degree. It was an interesting one with all the media around McGrath at the time too, Sam, if you remember. But I think ARIC's what it's always been. It's a great source to go and find some inspiration, a great source to go and find some implementation. But more importantly, it's just a great place to go and reconnect with like-minded people.
We noticed something really lacking at ARIC, socks.
And actually, I shared a flight home with Marty Fox, I think it is, and his...
We know he doesn't wear socks.
No, he doesn't wear socks, and I talked to him about that aspect. I said, you're obviously doing very well, but not well enough to go and get a pair of Bond socks. They're not that expensive. But it's a trend that's out there. I don't know. I don't really understand it and don't really get it, but I've never been one professing to be a fashionista, Sam, so I'll leave that to the more funkier agents, if that's okay.
Well, we've got some socks out there on the way to various people, including Marty Fox, so we're starting a campaign in 2019 to save our socks.
There we go. I'll back that.
Yep, that's a hashtag. June, bag rage, that became a thing. That's now in the dictionary now, bag rage, when we all turned up at Coles and Woolworths and probably still continue to do so for some of us without our shopping bags. And at the same time, the New South Wales government decided to crack down on Airbnb listings, saying that you couldn't put something on Airbnb for more than 180 days per annum, which is interesting. And I know that sort of brought New South Wales in line with some other states. But again, every state in Australia is different. How much of a threat do you think Airbnb is to the real estate industry in the future?
Well, certainly it's going to take some market, clearly, but I don't think it's going to take the majority of the market because most tenant applications are really market value orientated, where Airbnb is typically trying to reach for a very high dollar return in a very short period of time. So we saw it a lot traveling to America. We go to America virtually once a year. And New York, you could lease out an apartment for a week or two comfortably on your head. And then the greater city of New York tried to legislate out of that to make sure that New Yorkers could have a place to go. The water finds its level, and eventually there was enough rentals for the demand that was there, and there was still the opportunity to lease an apartment. So really, in summation, I think it's going to find its level, and Airbnb will continue to take a small, and I stress this, a small percentage of the market. I don't think we have to get too hung up on it. I'm a big one for not spending major time on minor things. I reckon that's a minor thing in our industry.
All right, July. Well, this is weird, really, because we've talked about the cricket, and in July we heard about the proposed merger of Nine and Fairfax for the first time. And so now we've got Domain sponsoring cricket on Seven when they're now owned by Nine. A figure.
I know, right.
So our main story that month was something on the future of work, and there's been lots of talk about HR matters in real estate this year. Our top story was on the award changes, because the real estate industry has in fact been slugged twice with two increases to the real estate award, which has changed a lot of the commission only rules and things like that. And then more recently, Fair Work have come out and said that you have to provide employees flexible working conditions or else kind of thing, like, or else you'll be given a please explain, without sounding like someone else we know. But with some of the top officers you're working with, what are some of the ways leaders are attracting and retaining top staff?
Well, it's all about their culture. No one wants to be part of any group that doesn't allow them to continue to grow to the next level, whatever that looks like. So the very good operations at the moment are managing their workforces and their sales teams and their property managers and their whole group, realistically. They're working around this process. If we know that Samantha's really happy in her home life, she's going to be very productive in her work life. So how do we make that happen? And it might be flexible work hours. It could be the fact that she doesn't come in on a Monday. We give her Sunday, Monday off, and that we shift our meetings from a Monday to a Tuesday to allow that to happen. So many of the best organisations have been doing that for a long, long time. But we're seeing growth in franchises, and we're seeing growth in independents, and we're seeing growth in boutique agencies as well. But I think what they're all doing, those growth organisations, Sam, they're working out how their workforce is allowed to continue to develop and shine in their environment, but at sometimes work hours that's flexible enough for them to go pick up the kids from school or to go and watch little Johnny's cricket match. If you go to places like Netflix and Google and LinkedIn, it's all about that whole cultural environment whereby business is not your life, it just funds your lifestyle. It's a mantra I've had for the better part of three decades, so I buy into that very, very easily. And I see that that's what the retain. There's no way you can attract Generation Next into a traditional real estate practice by saying you're going to work 6 days a week when you have an 8 o'clock meeting on a Monday morning. They're just going to go, I don't think so. That's not how they flow.
Yeah, 14 hours a day to get ahead. This is not Suits. Suits is not real life.
Exactly right. And so what they say is that might have worked for Generation X, doesn't work for Generation Next. So we need a culture that keeps Generation X engaged, but also brings across Generation Next, because that's the big challenge I see right across our industry is the next generation, the transition from those principals like me that was doing it for nearly 30 years, handing it across to the next generation. So you're going to have something that's tech savvy, high tech, high touch. You're going to have all those things in play. But it all gets around that one word, Sam, that we talked about earlier, which is culture.
It's interesting, you know, like you're just saying then about how principals were going to have to connect with younger teams and things like that. So we've sort of revisited Downton Abbey recently on TV, and I was watching an episode of that just last week, actually, where the old lady Maggie Smith said to someone, you younger generation, you're all so needy and you want everything so fast. And it kind of struck me as being interesting, because that's what we say is a bit of an older generation or Generation X about millennials, and it's absolutely no different to what people are feeling now, just in a slightly different time.
Well, I'm from that generation that knew and could draw the link between a cassette tape and a HB pencil. Now, for those millennials listening to this, you'll have to Google to know what I've just talked about there. But what I know is towards the end of my time running a team, I used to have to Snapchat my generation millennials, and I used to have to go and tap a Generation X on the shoulder and say, let's go have a coffee and have a chat. So somewhere in between, that's where we've got to be. If we're not going to be flexible with our leadership, we're not going to be able to sustain a team in this new frontier of the next decade or so, which is coming up a year and a bit from now, 2020. You're going to have the ability to broadcast across many platforms, whether that be on Snapchat, SMS, YouTube, touch and feel, have a coffee, that sort of stuff, Sam. My view on that is that it's all comes down to your ability to lead a growth culture.
Absolutely. August. So New South Wales gripped in drought and still is, and Apple became the world's first public company to achieve a market capitalization of $1 trillion. And we got a new Prime Minister. Hashtag ScoMo became hashtag PM. And you started a podcast called Voices of Value with Peter Kakos. So tell us about that.
That was just something that had been on our mental to-do list for probably 2 years. I can remember where I was when Pete was at the Inman conference and he sent me a photo and said, this is us, we're going to be doing this. And so he said, that's a great idea, and didn't do anything for about 2 years. But I was going through that writing process with the book and transitioning out of my business. So it was probably not the right time, but it's been absolutely a ball. We're into episode 16. We just interviewed Bianca Chatfield, who's really topical because she just was on the block, but she's exactly why we started the podcast. It wasn't just about Pete and I sitting around having observations about the industry and having a chat. So we've interviewed people within the industry. We've interviewed people outside of the industry. Bianca's my favourite interview. We'll obviously have to have you on, and reciprocal rights. We're playing on your home deck at the moment. You'll have to play on ours. But, yeah, we've interviewed David Knox. We've got a few great interviews in the can that will come out in 2019. We just spoke with Carolyn Balderstone. We just spoke with Fiona Blaney. We just spoke with Jerry Carman, who's a million-dollar principal on the Mornington Peninsula here in Melbourne. And, you know, he's a great business owner and great coach in his own right.
So we should go and have a listen to Bianca over Christmas. She'd be a pick.
Look, without being silly about this, I mean, if you've got anyone really, but you know, I'm a father of a teenage daughter. I sat down and listened to it with my daughter. I said, talk to me about what you got out of that. She was even giving me feedback, Samantha, that I wasn't even thinking about.
All right, cool. Prediction for next year, Rick, is hashtag ScoMo going to stay hashtag PM?
I don't really follow politics as well as I should, because my view is I'm not waiting for a better prime minister for me to have a better life. I'm not waiting for a change of government or a change of interest rates. I'm sort of realistically thinking all I want from my government is to look after those that can't look after themselves, build some roads, build some hospitals, build some schools, give us some infrastructure, protect our borders if that's what you want to do. I don't take my cue from Canberra. You know, I take my cue from me. So I really don't care. But my prediction is I suspect there'll be a change of government just based on what I can tell. But gee whiz, you know, it's anyone's guess at the moment. I saw the ALP launch their campaign yesterday, and that had protesters left, right and centre. And so my view is I think there'll be a change of government. I wouldn't take that to the bank, and it's not a bet I'd be banking. I'd just bet on myself and bet on yourself as a listener to this podcast. Just go out there, no matter who's in power, be the best you can be.
That's it. It's the outer market, isn't it? It's stuff you can't control. September was rugby league grand finals time, and it was all about the Birds this year. So the West Coast Eagles in the AFL and the Chooks taking out the Sydney Major Premiership. In real estate, the focus came back to technology and prop tech, and there was a heap of capital raisings, placements, products, robots, and more. It's dizzying, the amount of technology. And even at NAR, they said the ground is shaking with prop tech because we've never seen investment like it before in our time. I mean, look, going back to that Downton Abbey metaphor, you know, I was watching The Cook the other day with the younger cook next to her with a mixmaster. So disruption has been going on since the 1900s and earlier as well. But what is one tech trend that you think agents will need to be across next year?
Well, there's no doubt that there's $7.6 billion being spent in that prop tech space globally. So we know that technology is key. I think any platform that allow you to do more video and get it done well and get it done in a very smart, snappy way is going to have a massive impact for you. So the ability to use your smartphone as a media center is the apps I'm looking for. So anything that allows me to take a quick snap somewhere, a quick video somewhere and share it and post it and have it broadcast out there across all the platforms. That's kind of where I'm. I'm not really into AI that much. I don't really see that as ever replacing us. We're still a very hyper-local industry. But I think we've got to be better marketers of what we do than doers of it. And there's no better way of doing that than video. So we all know videos like shift the needle 15 minutes ago. We're seeing that all of the platforms, whether that be Instagram, LinkedIn, in the next year or two, a fair chunk is going to be video content. So I'm just looking for apps and or technological advantages that allows me to do more video.
Absolutely. Good advice there. Any favourite apps of yours right now?
I use a thing called PhotoFunnier, which is a really cool app that you can broadcast and message yourself in a really fun way. I'm looking at stuff like that. Again, people have kind of gone, man, what was your marketing budget to promote your book? We got told by my publisher, Wiley, you won't really sell too much from your own website. We sold 1,700 copies, and I would say most of my marketing, Sam, is through that app, PhotoFunnier. So it cost me a download app. That's really all it cost me. So it's really quite funny.
Love it a lot. October was the Invictus Games and Meghan and Harry came to Australia. And I suppose we shouldn't do a 2018 wrap-up with a tribute to some of the people that we've lost in the industry, because we lost some of the people that really shaped the industry as we know it. So we lost Di Jones, we lost Tony Fountain, and also David Nitschke of First National, three amazing people who enormously in their own ways shaped the industry as we know it certainly today. And you were part of First National for a long, long time, and you would have known David quite well. So what do you hope that everyone remembers David for?
Well, clearly I don't have to hope, because it was very evident that all of the postings I saw around that were summing him up. You know, the buzzword today, Sam, is about being authentic. Well, David lived that. He was an authentic, genuine person. What you saw is what you got. He had everyone's best interest at heart. He never went into any relationship, whether it be one-on-one with you or whether it be into his wider community, looking to see what he could get from that relationship. He looked to see what he could give to it. He didn't want his team to be go-getters. He wanted them to be go-givers. He was very big on that. So very authentic guy, a great loss to our industry. His family is incredibly lucky to have had him in their lives for as long as they did. And we as an industry are incredibly beneficial to have had him for that long as well. And Di Jones, I spoke at their conference this year. I said to Kylie Walsh, you know, she was one of those amazing people where you just got around her for like 30 seconds and she almost made you feel better just from being with her and in her presence. Didn't know Tony that well, but certainly the previous two I knew incredibly well. So I was saddened to hear about their loss, but I was glad that they ever were, because without them, we wouldn't have had their gifts that they brought to the table in our industry. And our industry is far better for having them. And so they're a loss, there's no doubt about that, but thank God we had them.
Yeah, absolutely. November, we took off to NAR in November, which you've been to a couple of times, the National Association of Realtors Conference, and we caught up with a couple of your good buddies over there, David Knox.
One of my favourite professional moments, Sam, was being introduced at the National Association of Realtors Convention when I got to speak there. He's introduced me twice there, and very rarely does an Australian get to speak at NAR, but to have him introduced me there was one of my absolute professional highlights of my life. He's an amazing guy. Yeah, he just taught me some great lessons about how to qualify, to disqualify non-motivated prospects. Selling isn't telling, it's asking. If you know how to qualify, you'll know how to answer their needs. And he still rates so highly because he's still got currency. And we're working on bringing him out for a conference or two in 2019. So we're pretty confident that we've got that locked away, so watch this space.
I sat in on his session at NAR, and still one of the best sessions I've been to on protecting fees.
Yeah, he's the best in the world at it. I mean, when I hear up-and-coming speakers and trainers using dialogue, I say, I know where you got that from. That's fantastic, because I got it from there as well. Fundamentals are fundamentals. They don't change. Now, a lot of trainers, they're old Cokes served up in shiny new Pepsi Max cans, but really it's his fundamentals all the way through. Just dialogue like, if you don't have a PA, you are a PA. I was hearing that in 1997 from it, you know. So when you're hearing dialogue around fees and that sort of stuff, and again, on our podcast, it was one of our highest rated ones, because he just gave content around protecting fees, dealing with buyers who don't want to buy, working with sellers who don't want to adjust their price. He is the best by that far. It's just not funny. If I had a choice to hear one real estate speaker and educator globally, anywhere, anytime, it would be him. And if I could get a hologram of Jim Rohn coming back from, you know, tragically passed away, what is now nearly 9 years ago, I'd have him too. So David is just the best there is.
Artificial intelligence may bring Jim Rohn back. Don't discount that. Never know what 2019 will bring. November, also the areas. So Barry Plant Manningham in Victoria, who was in your neighbourhood, they took out Agency of the Year for the second year in a row, which was amazing. Amazing to see the same agency do it 2 years in a row. Do you know them well? And what do you think sets an agency like that apart from the rest?
Well, I know Spiro incredibly well. And when he was in partnership with James, they were, James's first 3 days in real estate was in a 3-day program with me back in 1998, I think. So what sets them apart, Samantha, is they are incredibly passionate about finding the next best idea that's going to take their careers to the next level. So they go to everything. They'll absorb all the information. Spiro works his backside off. He's very committed to developing his team. I was just so thrilled to see them get acknowledged for what they are, because they're all the things we've talked about in this podcast. They're looking for the best opportunity in all the difficulties. They're a growth organisation. They've got Generation X through to millennials. They've got it all covered, and they work incredibly well. So kudos to them. Continued success will happen for them because they don't leave it up to chance. They actually get a process in play where they're still looking for the next best idea. And I think any organisation that's got that is going to continue to grow.
Absolutely. December, we're still kind of writing the chapter on December at the moment. We are going to wrap it up shortly, but what I would like to do, because this has been so much fun, is I'd like to end with a quick word association game. So basically, I'm going to give you a word or a phrase, and I'd like you to respond in one word.
Okay. Far away.
All right, here we go. Property bubble.
Overrated.
Me too.
Time.
Connection.
Vital.
Negative gearing.
Vital.
Scripts and dialogues.
Important.
Interest rates.
Indifferent.
Artificial intelligence.
Awareness.
Bucket list.
More.
Hero.
Only one? Jim Rohn.
Villain.
Negativity.
Affordability.
Important.
Summer.
Hot.
Shane Gould.
Inspirational.
Facebook Live.
Overrated.
Should be illegal.
Trolling.
Taylor Swift.
Tay-Tay. Okay.
Cave diving.
Scary.
Honey badger.
Joke.
A Star is Born.
Great.
Bitcoin.
Next.
France.
Love.
Donald Trump.
Hopeful.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Outstanding.
Netflix.
Great.
Christmas.
Home.
Santa.
Favourite.
New Year's resolutions.
Growth.
Advice.
Authenticity.
Happiness.
Family.
Rick Rushton, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much.
To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.